Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. We're going to talk next about an idea that's coming our way from New York City. And if you have ever had to rent an apartment here in Boston, it's probably going to resonate with you. Broker fees. Those are that full month rent fee that can be charged by a real estate broker to rent a unit. And it usually gets paid on top of first month, last month's security deposit to the landlord. New York regulators, using a new state law to strengthen rent control there, have mostly banned broker fees. Now, that ban has been put on hold for a month by a judge, but the idea remains there. And the question is, should Boston follow suit? Boston Mayor Marty Walsh's office is actually launching a working group to study the idea. We've been talking about this one all morning here at WBUR. So pull up a chair, talk with us. What's on your mind? Are you a broker and do you depend on these fees for your livelihood? Are you a renter or a tenant trying to find a place and find the fee burdensome? So do you support the idea of eliminating these fees or not? Call us 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. So with me here in the studio to discuss this is Greg Vassell. He is the president and CEO of the Greater Boston Real Estate Board. Greg, welcome back.
Thank you. Welcome.
Also is Mike Leyba, development director at City Life Vita Urbana, a Boston tenant advocacy group. Mike, great to have you as well.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so let's kind of frame this up. The median rent in Boston is around $2,400 for a one-bedroom, according to the real estate site Zumper. That means that tenants would have to put out close to $10,000 up front if you did broker fee first, last, and security deposit just to rent a new place. Eliminating the broker fee would take $2,400 off of that, but that's a lot left for someone to pay. Greg, let me just start by asking you, what would eliminating the broker fee mean to your members, to brokers themselves?
Well, the interesting thing about the brokerage industry is there are a lot of unlicensed rental agents that are running around out there. Brokers are members that adhere to a code of ethics. They have a state license, so they're regulated by the state. They help people with lead paint issues. They do credit checks. They are many times in the rental situation work for the owner directly. So they're also providing a service as well. And depending on how the brokerage and listing agreements are, people think that a rental agent may get the entire fee. They may not. They may be splitting it with other entities. So, you know, this is their livelihood. People think that a lot of the brokers make a lot of money. And there are people that may make a sale or two a year and then are scrambling to try to make ends meet and use things like the brokerage fee to sort of supplement their income.
Okay, Mike, does City Life support the idea of eliminating broker fees? And what do you think it would mean for tenants if the city were able to do that?
We support the idea. I think it needs to be part of a much larger suite of protections for tenants. And in New York, the New York example that you mentioned, it was in fact part of a larger tenant protection bill. So we support the elimination of brokers' fees as much as it's part of a larger, more comprehensive anti-displacement and affordable housing production strategy.
All right. I want to grab a couple of calls because the lines are filling up quickly. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Let's start with Kevin in Somerville. Kevin, what do you want to say with our panelists?
Hi, yeah. My name is Kevin. So I'm actually representing Greater Boston Association of Realtors as well. And I totally agree with Greg that brokers fee would be taken away. The brokers fee would be detrimental to the realtor or the agent community. And not only that, you know, the agents do not take a huge chunk out of this. They take actually a minimal part of it after showing, you know, 5 to 10 units to tenants. And it's not always true that it's broker's fee, first, last, and security. There are many units out there that just requires first and security. So really, there's always room for negotiation.
I'm going to stop you there. You've got some good points there, and our lines are filling up. I want to grab one more caller before I take us back to the panel. Sorry to interrupt you there. I do want to add Steve from Arlington. Steve, go ahead.
Okay, thanks very much. I've been a landlord for over 30 years. I have never used a rental agency to find tenants. I do not believe in paying a fee that unfortunately is going to have to be absorbed by the prospective tenant. It is the cost of doing business. And with people having to pay such high rents first, last month, et cetera, It makes no sense to me that they should also have to pay a finder's fee. This is what has to be done by the landlord. They're making enough money. They can absorb the cost to advertise their property.
Thanks for that call, Steve. I appreciate it. So, Greg, I'll turn to you first. You've got a yin and a yang there, right? There is a tension between people who may be providing services and just the staggering cost of rents in Boston. How do we think about that tension?
Well, the solution is production. And we need more units for people at all price ranges. And sort of that's one of the biggest things that we face and we've been struggling and fighting for pretty hard. You know, Steve raises a great point. There's a lot of people out there that list their properties directly. So that's an avenue for people to take. And, you know, it's hard and it's difficult for them, for folks to find units that may be looking because we don't have enough of them out there. So, I mean, it's one that we can't resolve simply. And the interesting thing about the New York law and the fact that the judge put it on hold is it's not clear that they even had the authority to prevent those fees in the way that that legislation was drafted. And if it was more transparent, I think you would have had a different outcome and it may not have gotten through the New York state legislature the way it did.
Let me just ask you for your reactions, Mike.
Yeah, I think so. One thing that's a clarifying point is that the New York law didn't actually eliminate or ban brokers' fees altogether. It eliminated the ability for landlords to have a broker to pass that cost off to a tenant, right? So as a landlord, I could still engage a broker as long as I'm paying the broker's bill. And as a tenant, I can engage a broker as long as a tenant, I agree to pay that broker's fee. So the New York law is very specific and it wouldn't eliminate broker fees altogether. That said, I agree that there actually needs to be more development, but it definitely needs to be – it can't be at all levels. Right now in Boston specifically, in Greater Boston, we're developing at levels that are unprecedented and they're not
– Levels or, meaning high rent is what you mean.
I mean
is
both.
Right?
I mean in terms of production, like quantity of units that are being produced as well as the cost of the units.
Okay.
Yeah, last year or last quarter, the average median rent in Boston is $2,350 about. That's unaffordable for most of working class Bostonians.
All right, let's grab another call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Lucia is on the line from Stowe. Lucia, go ahead.
Yeah, my daughter just got an apartment in December in Brighton. But we looked at several others in Brighton, and they were horrible. They were little studios for $1,600, a deposit, and a broker's fee. I'm not against broker's fee, but I think they need to be half, and then the owner of the buildings maybe need to pay it. You're talking about $4,000 just to move into an apartment in Boston. When I was looking in the 80s, I know it's a long time ago, you just paid a security deposit and the rent. And, I mean, it's just, I mean, these apartments are not nice.
Yeah, let's pick it up from there, Lucia. I want to come back to Greg and Mike on that. You know, last year a study came out by J.P. Morgan Chase. It was a national study. It found that nationally, on average, a middle-income family needs about $5,000 in a rainy day fund but only has $2,000. That's a $3,000 gap. And lower-income families need about $2,500 but just have $700. Another study from last year found that only 40% of Americans could cover an unexpected $1,000 expense. So the kinds of cash outlays we're talking about just for a fee do seem like they'd be beyond much of what people can afford. So how does one even do this in the first place? And isn't it time to consider lowering the overall cash outlay for what it takes to obtain housing? Mike, you're nodding. I'll turn to you first, and then Greg, I want to come to you too.
Yeah, just to point out that there actually is a bill in front of the Housing Committee right now, which is a Tenant Protection Act, which enables municipalities. It's a local options bill. So the city of Boston or any city throughout the Commonwealth would be able to finance upfront moving costs over a six-month period. It's based on a policy that's currently being used in Seattle. And you know, it's in front of the Housing Committee, and it will be until March 31st when they recommend whether to send it to study or out of committee, report it favorably. So there is definitely agree that the high move-in costs are prohibitively expensive for most people and that something needs to be done to do that.
Greg, what are your reactions?
The costs are daunting, but I mean, again, it's the difficulty that we face with success in Boston. And what we need to also look at is if you look at the city's numbers for production, the city has far outpaced any other community that is around it. So we need to be, this needs to be a regional solution.
Yeah, there you go.
And we need to build in other communities, not just in Boston itself, because in Boston, you're looking at the highest land costs in the entire state.
I say, yeah, there you go, because we've had conversations here with Mayor Marty Walsh And we covered this with Governor Charlie Baker's State of the Commonwealth address. And this question of regional solutions to our housing challenges does come up over and over again. Lines are full, so let's grab a couple more callers. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got Ernie on the line from Quincy. Ernie, go ahead.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking the call. I had a couple of quick thoughts. One is that I think there ought to be a sliding fee for brokers, and brokers should get paid. But I think there needs to be a sliding fee that's really linked to how many apartments did you see. If you saw one and you rented it, versus if you see 10 with that broker and finally rent the 10th, there should not be it should not be the same fee. And two, I think that I've rented apartments where there was no fee, where there was half a fee, and where there was a full fee. And so my second point is I think there ought to be a standard that's agreed to so people know what they're walking into.
Thanks for that, Ernie. I'm going to add one more caller voice in here. We've got Steve from Arlington. Steve, go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks very much. So I'm a real estate agent here in Arlington, and there are three things very specific to talk about. One of the things is that a broker and a true realtor, their main job is not to just show the property, but to make sure that the property itself that's listed by the landlord is in compliance with all the state and city regulations. Most landlords sometimes try to bypass the real estate agent because their property doesn't meet certain standards. There's all the things the agent does as far as making sure that the property has a lead paint compliant form, that it meets the discrimination approvals, that it's a legal apartment and not an illegal apartment. And the other thing is that, you know, there are two sides of the fee. There's an agent that's going to represent the seller and or the landlord, and they're going to pay a fee for that. And then the agent that's representing the buyer should get a paid a fee from that buyer agent or the tenant agent.
All right, let's pick it up from there, Steve. Thank you so much for explaining that structure. So what we have here, gentlemen, I feel like we've got this rock and this hard place where we hear people saying there are services that are important to provide, although we've got another caller here who I think we're probably not going to get to who's saying, hey, I found my own apartment and still had to pay a broker's fee. On the other hand, we have this the unquestioning fact that it's a lot of money to lay out, that we are short on housing stock, and that affordable housing is a key issue. So kind of what's our path forward given this rock and hard place? This time I'll start with you, Greg, and then I'll go to Mike.
Well, number one, I think the first thing we need to do is pass the governor's housing choice bill.
To say a little more about that.
That bill is really important because and basically won't do a lot for the city of Boston, but it will do a lot for the communities that surround Boston. It'll loosen up zoning and it'll allow developers to come in and build in communities that have been hostile to multifamily housing and development in general. That's one of the reasons why I think when you take a look at the city and Mayor Walsh and what he's done, Boston has been incredibly generous to development. And as Mike mentioned, we've done a lot of development in the city. It's time for the other communities to step up. There's about 7 or 8 really big points in that, 2/3 zoning changes, accessory dwelling units, little things, not the silver bullet that solves the problem, but the first step. We haven't had meaningful zoning reform in Massachusetts in like 30, 35 years. It's time we do more for people, and this is the only way we can do it. That's the real political football here is zoning, and we need to focus on it.
And how about from City Life's perspective, Mike?
I think I agree with that broad to some degree. I think that Boston definitely is producing more than the rest of the suburban communities around it. I think focusing on – we cannot build ourselves out of this crisis. And I think
Why
that
not?
Focusing on production is just – it's frankly, it's very profitable, and it's the landlord's and the developer's agenda. I would say that the only way that we're going to address displacement and address affordable housing is through a comprehensive solution which protects tenants in addition to building new housing.
What are you really saying here, Mike?
I'm saying that the Housing Choices Bill is itself not the solution. It's not a silver bullet. It is it provides no immediate short-term benefit to anybody who is struggling right now today.
And what do you think is necessary for immediate short-term benefit for people who are struggling today?
The bill that we're talking about
the Tenants' Rights Bill.
In New York, the bill that we're referencing in New York was part of a larger comprehensive housing solution, which strengthened their rent control laws. And we cannot talk about displacement and affordability crisis in Boston or in Greater Boston or throughout the Commonwealth without talking about rent control.
So that would require statewide action. In 1994, rent control was essentially abolished through a statewide initiative. Is it viable to think that the Commonwealth of Massachusetts is ready to create conditions where rent control can come back? What do you think, Greg?
Rent control in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts would be the death knell of housing and housing production. When you take a look at our economy, our growth, our vibrancy, we would be back to, you know, people forget what rent control was like, the quality of units. Rent control doesn't necessarily just help people that are less fortunate. There are a lot of rich people that are in rent control units that were gaming the system. It's not the be-all and end-all, and it doesn't solve the problems here. That would be the step in the wrong direction for us.
So, Mike, you know, in New York and San Francisco, they have rent control, but it's actually not done a lot to curb housing costs. They're two of the most expensive markets. Oregon passed rent control statewide last year, and according to a report from Brookings, overall rent control, quote, appears to help current tenants in the short run. In the long run, it decreases affordability, fuels gentrification, and creates negative spillovers. So why is this an area that you're pushing so hard, given what that data suggests?
Well, you know, with due respect to Brookings, I wouldn't necessarily rely on them as the sole voice about economic policy and in regards to rent control.
Why do you say that?
Because the truth on the ground that we see every single day is just does not reflect that reality. Rent control in Massachusetts, it was in three cities and towns. It was in Boston, Brookline, and Cambridge, and it was voted by 351 cities and towns across the Commonwealth. So to say that it was unpopular was actually not true. In the cities that actually had rent control, it was very popular. But, you know, it was the real estate industry that decided to launch a campaign against it, to repeal it. And so that's what happened in Massachusetts. And as a result of it, we're burdened with this ridiculous home rule petition process, which means that municipalities don't have the tools that they need to actually address the housing crisis in their backyard.
Okay, Greg, Mike, 15 seconds each. Greg, where is there some common ground?
I think we need to have a bigger forum where tenants, owners, and everybody gets together to solve a problem. Because what we see is these ridiculous rallies, and we spend a lot of energy, and we do a lot of press, but nobody gets in the room, rolls up their sleeves, and really solves a problem here.
Okay. And Mike, what about you? Common ground.
I think it's hard to find common ground when the voice of the people is just disregarded.
So
how are we supposed to enter a room with somebody like that?
All right. So that is Mike Leyba, Development Director at City Life Vita Urbana, a Boston tenant advocacy group. Mike, thanks for being here. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And Greg Vassell, President and CEO of the Greater Boston Real Estate Board. Greg, thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, stay with us. Coming up, NPR's Steve Inskeep on John and Jesse Fremont, an 1850s couple that he says invented celebrity. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston.